countering Jacksonville's violence by treating crime as a public health issue. A closer look just ahead. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and just ahead, we've got a look at the Cure Violence program. It's one plot. It's around the country. Could it help Jacksonville? What activists think about whether it could bring down crime rates in this city? What do you think? What are your questions? Give us a call right now at 549-2937. Then later, this week's signature chef's competition in the city. A look ahead to that very delicious event. Plus, comedian Kathleen Madigan, all of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, it's a new approach to crime prevention, treating violence as a disease, a public health problem. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry says he wants to invest in a renowned program called Cure Violence. It's a step being greeted positively by community activists. How does Cure Violence work, and could it make a difference in this city? Here with his thoughts, we welcome back to the show Ben Frazier of the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville. Ben, good morning.
Good morning to you and, of course, to all our listeners out there this
morning. Always good to have you on the show. And what are your questions and comments about Cure Violence? Give us a call right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. There's also our Facebook page. Okay. Mayor Curry says he would like to bring Cure Violence to Jacksonville. He's already invested about $7,500 in taxpayer funds to assess whether this is a good idea. This is a program that has worked in cities like Chicago, Baltimore, Oakland, California, other cities that have a gun violence and homicide problem. What's the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville's position on Cure Violence?
We look at this like it's a good thing. It's not a magic wand. It's not a panacea. It's not the rabbit that's going to get pulled out of the hat. No one strategy or policy alone is going to deliver us from this madness that presently envelops our city and our communities. However, we think that Cure Violence, that program, which started out in Illinois as Ceasefire Illinois, stops the spread of violence by using the methods and strategies associated with disease control. That's a good thing. We know that it's not all gang violence, that some of these things that occur are spur-of-the-moment, flare-ups, anger, failure to resolve conflicts. So then, there are three distinct parts of the Cure Violence program. Number one, it is detecting and interrupting conflicts as you would a pathogen with a disease. Mm-hmm. Stop the transmission. That's number one. Number two, identify and treat the highest risk individuals. Who are we talking about? Talking about 17, 34, most of them black, the people who are in fact doing the shooting and the people who are being shot. So then you have to identify and treat the highest risk individuals. That's part two. And part three is changing our social norms, our attitudes in terms of how we accept these things. People get shot all the time. It should not be accepted as the new normal. We should change our collective perspective as a community. We should change the thinking of the people involved, the high-risk people who glorify violence. We'll gotta stop that.
We'll go to your calls in a moment about this city's violent crime program and what you think about Cure Violence. Should the city adopt this? What are your questions about Cure Violence? It's 549-2937. To join us now, a study by the Department of Justice showed that Cure Violence, when it's applied in cities, can reduce shootings and killings by 40 to 70%. There are literally people on the ground, foot soldiers of this organization that go out into communities, find victims of crime and their families, almost going into communities as social workers. And it has demonstrated to be a viable and successful program, something the mayor says he wants to do. Let me ask you, as someone who's been involved in community work for a long time. How does this differ from the Jacksonville Journey, which was convened over a decade ago and to look at the root causes of crime and try to address them?
Jacksonville Journey, I think, overall was a good program. Unfortunately, the funding was pulled back. We have to be concerned about funding, even as it relates to cure violence in long term, the sustainability of the program. If we're not going to go ahead and commit and buy into this, then we don't need to start it. However, you asked about the difference. The difference was Jacksonville Journey, and I was on there along with you, by the way.
We sat on a subcommittee together all those years ago. Yep.
But the bottom line is that it brought together a lot of people with some stellar resumes, but they didn't have people with boots on the ground. And the big difference is this is boots on the ground. It's a lot like the 12-step program introduced by Bill Wilson in AA, because it utilizes people in the community.
Right. The Journey took some criticism for having a lot of people on these various committees that didn't live in neighborhoods that were having problems with violent crime.
They were a lot of well-meaning people.
But they didn't have a real in-depth understanding of what it's like to live in a community that's dealing with this every day.
Precisely. We've been able to, as an organization, go out into the community. You may or may not be familiar with our canvassing effort. Over the past 3 months, we have actually reached over 1,000 households, talking to people about their concerns, talking to people about things that we need to make them aware of, because these people have been ignored for literally generations, not just mayoral administrations. Their concerns have been overlooked, not acknowledged. So we've been going out there, the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, knocking on doors and walking up to people on the street. I'm proud to say that I've had some very brave people in my organization who have done this, because we walked into 32209, which has been described by some journalists as a killing field, the highest homicide rate in the state of Florida. But that didn't stop us, because we recognize those people are our neighbors. And just as Bill Wilson recognized in AA, we recognize that we've got to do our role in reaching out to those folks.
And let's get your thoughts on cure violence as we speak right now with Ben Frazier of the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville. What are your thoughts and questions? Could this be the program or the approach that really makes a difference for Jacksonville? Give us a call, 549-2937. Rick is on the north side. Hi, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
All right, thanks.
Good morning.
Okay, the last thing you said is what struck me is treating violence like it's an everyday thing. You know, like, for example, on the news, something might happen in my neighborhood. Somebody might get beat almost half to death. I won't hear nothing about it on the news. They won't say nothing about it. It's like it never happened. So maybe, you know, I know over-focusing some people don't like, but sometimes you have to focus on the problem so people won't be afraid to come out and say something about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
sure.
Sir.
And, you know, I appreciate the call, Rick. You know, local news organizations just don't have the staff they used to. So that's part of the reason why they don't cover everything that's going on in the city. What I can tell you, though, is that on this program, we try to talk about this issue often. We may not talk about individual incidents all the time, although we have sometimes, but we try to bring a regular focus to it, which is why Ben's here today.
But what this gentleman is talking about is our community norms, our attitudes toward these news stories. And we shouldn't get used to it. We should not accept this as the new normal. And there is a role for the media to play, which the media has shied away from in recent years. You remember the days of public service announcements when we were actually required to do so many of those? Well, guess what? We have an epidemic going on. Lives are being lost. Radio stations and television stations should be attempting to address this issue in the way that they can. We need to put a positive message out there. We need to talk about people respecting themselves and each other, and the fact that we are no longer going to accept this code of violence that is perpetuating and reaping havoc on our communities.
Dorian is on the west side. Hey, Dorian, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. I wanted to go back to the point that Mr. Frazier mentioned earlier, that the funding for the Journey, which I thought was a valiant effort, was diminished as the mayoral administrations changed. And he said that if we're not going to make a long-term commitment to cure violence, then the whole effort shouldn't be undertaken. And I'd like to know how he and his organization are going to make sure that there's a long-term commitment that supersedes mayoral administration so that the funding can continue long-term, because this is a long-term problem that's not just 4 years long.
I think that's an excellent point, Dorian. You're absolutely right. You know, a dedicated funding source for this,
right,
which it really is a public health emergency.
It is
in this city.
It is, in fact, a community problem that deserves a community answer. It's not just the city. It's not just JSO. It also has to include the private sector, some definite asks from the private sector, the Chamber of Commerce. There's got to be grants. There's got to be foundations. We need to put this pool of money together. Why? Because the first-year startup for one Cure Violence Zone is about $450,000. That's just one. You could have more than one in one zip code. So then if you talk about the estimated cost of hospitalization, of monies lost as a result of a murder, that's small potatoes. But we have to be honest. The five-year cost of a program such as this is going to run us probably about $4 million.
Right. It's not cheap.
It's not cheap.
And it's why, as you pointed out, the Jacksonville Journey Initiative, which was a really complex, multi-pronged initiative, it just slowly but surely saw its funding dribble away. And so I think the caller raises an excellent point that there needs to be political will to set up an independent funding source for violence reduction in this city that will last through multiple administrations.
Yes, because what we're talking about is a problem that goes far beyond partisan politics. This is not just a black problem or a white problem or a Republican problem or a Democratic problem. This is a citywide problem.
Yeah, it is not just a North Side problem.
Precisely.
By any means, it
affects the entire city, and not just even the precious lives, which are number one. What about our economy? The shooting that took place on game day, where six people were shot, could have been much uglier had those people been walking away from the football game. It would have had a demonstrative and substantial impact in a negative way on whether anybody wanted to ever go to another football game again in Jacksonville.
And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Ben Frazier of the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville about Cure Violence. This is an initiative other cities have tried with success. Mayor Curry here in Jacksonville is looking at this. What are your questions, comments? Robert is in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'd like to agree with Mr. Frazier on the fact that we need to have people from the community involved. I've been associated with Florida Youth Maritime Training now for 5 years. We've been working with a group called Mad Dads. We've gotten over 140 young men employed, starting off at salaries at about $45,000 a year. Now, the thing that I'm going to say is that while I know a lot about maritime, I don't know much or anything about the North Side. And so what we found is that partnership where we had local folks like Don Foy from Mad Dads recruiting for our program really worked well. The other thing I'd like to say is I disagree with Mr. Frazier about should this be funded through tax dollars. We found that private funding has been a much better solution for us because irrespective of the politics and the mayor involved, we're able to provide assistance to disadvantaged youth at risk. So I'd like to encourage seeing private funds raised and used for that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Robert, for your call. Ben.
Well, certainly, and perhaps he missed part of what I was saying. I'm suggesting that it has to be all of these things involved. It has to be the city. Why? Because we're living here. We're citizens. There should be city involvement. There should be city funds involved in this. The city has skin in this game, okay?
And to be clear, the mayor is looking at that. Precisely. And this wouldn't be the first mayor to look at this and, right. and dedicate city funds.
Right.
Yeah.
What we're suggesting, caller, is that we all have skin in this game. We should all be held accountable. And I'm certainly all for private funding. And we'd like to encourage the private sector to get on board in this fight to reduce violence in our city.
Now, your group, the Northside Coalition, recently received a grant, a $10,000 grant for crime prevention, correct?
That is correct.
And what are you going to do with that private
funding? Well, actually, it was an idea that I came up with while the two of us were on the public relations committee of Jacksonville Journal.
Really?
Yeah, and I never got this out. You know, I needed your vote back then, and
my vote? Yeah. I didn't know anything. What was I supposed
it's
to do?
It's all your fault.
It's all my fault.
The okay. bottom line is, we have a rap contest.
No way.
That's going to involve high schoolers, some of the same at-hope youngsters that are affected by this violence. But we're not going to allow them to use those ugly words that I hear on some rap songs. We want to do rap. We want to do poetry. We want to do
like a poetry slam, like a hip-hop yeah, like, poetry slam.
Precisely, but we're going to have Stop the Violence, Increase the Peace.
Nice.
As the theme.
When is this going to be?
Actually, we're going to do this beginning in January through the end of the school year with a major performance and prizes, real prizes, with the recording at the end for the actual grand prize winners. We want to involve kids at Revolt, Reigns, Paxson, as well as three or four other high schools. And we're focusing on high schools this year, maybe more next year. But we want to involve the children and meet them where they are.
Sure. And at the end of the segment, we'll let everyone know again how they can be part of Increase the Peace, the music contest, and the concert you're planning, Ben. But let me get a few tweets on the air. Here is one from Jim. Did you see the recent story? Jacksonville is a massive gun smuggling gateway, a funnel for illegal firearms. That's a News for Jack's I-Team investigation. So that is part of the problem, of course. Victor tweets the show. The Northside Coalition is going out, knocking on doors, listening. But what is the city doing outside of trying to throw money at the issue? We can't rely on partner programs to do the work. We need more collaboration. Jay says on Twitter, violence reduction is not a problem to be solved. It's part of the human condition. Every generation, the cure for violence is education, jobs, and real hope for people to better their lives. And here's a tweet from Steve about the Cure Violence program. I believe Chicago ended Cure Violence, deciding to focus instead on community policing and other strategies. I will have to check that.
Well, I think that there was also a question in Chicago as it relates to funding. And that's the issue. And again, I'm being very upfront with regard to our commitment to this program going in before the gavel sounds and begins the meeting. We've got to be committed to spending the dollars that are going to be necessary. Spending money for a problem is not throwing money at a problem. We need jobs. You understand there is an inextricable link between poverty, unemployment, and crime. We must admit it. The code of violence and the code of the streets is what it is because people feel a loss of hope. Ours is not a philosophy of doom and gloom, but of faith and not fear. We think that if we approach this with the right attitude and strong leadership, that working together, all of us, each of us, we can make a positive change.
Andy emails the show, I don't want to be a naysayer. I welcome any positive effort around this, but saying that this program worked in Chicago is worrisome considering the murder rate there. I also know the mayor will not promote any program that will displease the NRA, and I am skeptical of anything that does not address the gun culture. Your thoughts on that?
Well, again, the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, by the way, has a 10-point gun reduction violence plan to reduce the violence. And one of those things is, for example, the gun show loophole, which we think should be closed. That allows people to sell guns from out of the back of their cars without a background check. The person selling doesn't have to be licensed. We are for addressing this availability of guns. Too many guns are in the hands of people who really should not have them. And yes, availability is also a problem. And yes, we should address it.
William in Murray Hill. Hi, William.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love to work you. My question, and good morning as well. My question, you just said, hit it on the head. If most of the businesses in this town are owned by Caucasians, how are you going to address getting the people who don't live, who, you know, with the money to sort of see the necessity of, you know, of the problem? My second real quick is, in Baltimore, where I moved from, they had ex-cons, excuse me, I don't know how to say it, but the guys who had records, who had gotten out and started businesses, and they had them to go out and be a conduit, you know, for positivity. How would you address that?
That's a part of the program. A core part of the program is to utilize what is referred to as violence interrupters, people to go and talk to who have intelligence of what's really going down on the streets. For example, a caller, again, my name is Ben Frazier, and many people know me as the first black television news anchorman in this town. But there's another side of me as well. I'm also a person who has had to jump out of windows when gunshots were fired, hide under houses, in between parked cars, and sometimes in manholes because I was scared to death. And so I have a background pretty much on the street. Yes, I've had the opportunity to have drinks at the White House, but I also know what it's like to have a drink on the corner. Bottom line is, we need to have those people who are actively involved, who know each other, to talk to each other, and that is a large part of this program, the violence interrupters. The other part of this is that we cannot sit back on our thumbs and do nothing and simply criticize every effort that comes up to try to address this issue in a positive way. We've got to change our thinking. We've got to change our attitude. And I'm here to tell you that I'm not simply expressing some naivete by saying, I know we can work together and make a change.
When you look at the website, by the way, it's cureviolence.org for anyone that wants to check this out. Their model uses the same three components that doctors use to reverse outbreaks of disease. One, you interrupt transmission of the disease. Two, you reduce the risk to the highest risk population. And three, you change community norms. And I think that's honestly, in the end, the most important one. You know, if you look at it from a disease health model, a norm that became common about 100 years ago was everyone started washing their hands.
That's right.
Everybody finally figured out, in order to stop the spread of germs and disease, we've all got to wash our hands. That's an example of a norm being adopted. And so with this, from what I know of this, Cure Violence is trying to get a whole community to change its norms about refusing to accept violence as a matter of course.
We know that punishment is simply not the answer. Punishment does not change people's behaviors. It doesn't work. We continue to try the same police tactics over and over again, and we keep getting the same darn results. Guys, it's time to try something new.
Susie tweets the show, I've been working with healthcare providers in the 32209, 32208, and 32218 zip codes for 20 years. My kids went to magnet schools in those zip codes. These areas have been neglected for years. Cure Violence can work because it's coming from within the community, not outside it. All right, let's take one more call. Tracy on the South Side. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Melissa. Hey, Ben Frazier. Hello. Huge fan of your passion for the community. And for those who weren't tuned in at the top of the hour, you also mentioned the Bill Wilson model for Alcoholics Anonymous as being a good part of a start. And for the callers who are not familiar, the 12 steps of AA, only once in the first step is alcohol even mentioned. In fact, many groups, including Celebrate Recovery, have embraced the 12 steps, not just for people struggling with alcoholism, but struggling with any situation in their life. They just replace the word alcohol with that with what they're struggling with, whether that be anxiety, control, you know, just the variants that come with living in the 09 area code. So I'm very excited to hear you mention that, because it has proved time and time again to be a great model of change, how to change something
yes.
in your life.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks for that, Tracy.
This is all about change. This is all about leadership. But more than anything else, it is about attitude. We've got to change our attitude and stop being philosophers of doom and gloom, but of hope instead. Keep hope alive.
Reginald in Orange Park. Hi, Reginald.
Good morning. How are you, ma'am?
I'm good. Go ahead.
I'm in total agreement with what I hear. It sounds wonderful and great, but I would ask you to consider one thing that nobody's talking about. Consider the source. We got to understand where all this came from, what brought it about. Address the matter at its source, okay? Change from the very foundation of what brought all this evil into our communities, and then come up with a solution that'll help our young people change their way of thinking and change the things that they do. They have to be re-educated. They have to go through a form of rehabilitation, all right? You can't ask people to come back to reality when they've been in darkness for the last 50, 150, 200, 300, 400 years, whatever the case might be, all right? Because this is not a surface matter. This matter goes very, very deep. All right, and I would ask you and the gentleman to please consider the source. All right, there's people who've been made rich and wealthy because they turned a blind eye to the drugs. Oh, well, there's just whatever. Let it go to their neighborhoods. Oh, this just whatever. Just let that happen. Oh, it doesn't matter. But when it touches the soul and the hearts of minds of mainstream America, then we have issues, then we have problems, and all of a sudden solutions can come up overnight. An example of that is when the Black Panthers walked into the California Assembly, all of a sudden, man, gun rules and gun laws came out restricting and prohibiting everything. So nobody needs to say that solutions can't be come up with, can't be brought about quickly and fastly. It can be. It just has to happen to the right people. So what I'm asking you is address the source. Go to the source of the problem and take it from there.
Okay, thank Reginald. You. Okay.
Reginald brings up some very good points, and let's try to address them. Number one, there's a book written by a guy named Elijah Anderson. He talks about the code of the streets. And in that book, he delineates the code, examines it as a response to the lack of jobs that pay a living wage, to the stigma of race, racism, white supremacy, the lack of hope. We're not sweeping any of those problems under the rug. You're talking to a person who has had to be confronted with each of those throughout his professional career. The bottom line is that despite it all, despite the economics, and we know that we are still involved in economic slavery in this city and this country as a race of people, economic slavery still exists. But I must say,
and by that you mean
lack of economic opportunities. For example, in 32209, where we have so many problems, 47% of the people, if not 50%, are living below the poverty line. These are very real issues that we have to address. There is a connection, and we're going to have to address it. We're going to have to be honest about it.
Now, let me just mention a few things before we wrap up with Ben, because I'm getting lots of emails about things that are happening in town that have to do with this issue. This Sunday at 4:00, there will be an interfaith service in Memorial Park, a community gathering to honor the lives that have been taken and the survivors of gun violence over the last 2 years.
Right.
This is coming up Sunday, 4 p.m. in Memorial Park. Anyone can come to that. At the same time, One Jax is emailing the show asking people to register for their civil discourse series looking at the problem of youth violence in Jacksonville. That is coming up here at WJCT Wednesday, November 28th. So two events there. And then the Northside Coalition is doing Increase the Peace. So how can people be part of that?
Well, we're going to have more on Increase the Peace in terms of the high school rap spoken word competition in the weeks ahead. However, we do have a fundraiser coming up on the 15th at a place called the Breezy Jazz Club. Spoken word, that is this Thursday, the 15th of November at 6 p.m. We'd love to have you come out. Remember, this is not about doom and gloom. This is about hope, not hopelessness, but faith. We can work together. We can change it. We can turn it around. It's all about the right attitude, because attitude will determine altitude.
And when it comes to spoken word, Ben, I know I've said this before, I don't see how anyone can beat you.
Thank
you. So it's
a
good thing you're not competing in this.
No, I'm not competing.
You should just come here once a week and just read the phone book, because we would all like that
well,
very much.
Thank you. I'm flattered by your comments, and it's always such a pleasure to be here.
It's
thank
always
you.
Great to have you. Ben
First
Frazier.
Coast Connect.
Thank you, Ben Frazier.
Thank
Always
you.
Great to see you. Still to come, our book club on the show, but up next, Movable Feast checks in on this week's Signature Chefs after this.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. Yes, it's the only thing that there's just too little love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for
a story to tell? Since 2003, StoryCorps has been collecting and archiving stories from all over the country. From November 18th to December 21st, StoryCorps will be right here in Jacksonville. StoryCorps is the two-time Peabody Award-winning nonprofit whose mission is to preserve and share humanity's stories. If you've ever listened to their NPR program, you know how powerful and touching these stories can be. To have StoryCorps record your story, make your reservation today at wjct.org/events.
WJCT readers are here for you. With the Florida Times Union complete with news, op-eds, and obits, our readers will bring the paper to life to serve those with blindness and other physical challenges. Need our service? Go online to wjct.org/radio reading. Listen there and register as a listener, or we'll send you a special radio free. Call us at 904-358-6308, because at Radio Reading, we give voice to the printed word.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue, and catering.
Welcome back. Well, this Thursday night, the 28th annual Signature Chefs Competition, benefiting the March of Dimes, takes over the downtown Omni Hotel. It's your chance to sample some of the best cuisine in town. Award-winning chef Eric Espinoza, head chef at Mezza at the Beaches, won the top chef competition at last year's event. In our Movable Feast this morning, he sits down with our own Lee Court.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami.
How many
Tommy.
Years has Mezza, it used to be a lot of people know it as Mezza Luna, now it is Mezza. a block away from the Atlantic Ocean, but it's been an anchor of the beach's dining spots for a very long time.
Yes. It's been, I believe it's been there for 30 years, 28 to 30 years, somewhere around there.
During the influx of people moving to the beaches area. Yeah. And one of the things I remember about Mezza were the hot pizza ovens, and the pizzas were just spectacular. But I heard through the grapevine that your passion is seafood.
Yes, I love my seafood. I like to work with the local seafood, and I work with this local fishmongers and get my seafood in daily. And so it's kind of a treat to, you know, come in each day and talk to them and figure out what I'm going to do for that day, you know, what's fresh. And
so you paint your picture on the plate every day.
Yeah.
It starts in the morning.
Yeah.
With, of course, seasonal produce and fruits and, you know, all of the accompaniments, but of course the seasonal seafood that's here in North Florida. So what is one of your favorite dishes? And then we're going to talk about March of Dimes.
You know, I don't know if I really have a favorite dish. It's, I just like to, like I said, go in, talk to my fishmongers, see what kind of seafood I can get. Then throughout the week, I'll have my produce people come in, and I work with some local farms around, and they, you know, they'll stop by in their van, and they'll just come in and bring me a box and say, you know, this is what we got this week. And
so we'll play.
And then I just, you know, I build from there.
There are some noted chefs that are participating with you on November 15, and the event is actually taking place at the Downtown Omni Hotel. And we have Chef Tom Gray from Town Hall and Moxie Kitchen, Chef Laird Bowles from the Ice Plant in St. Augustine, Logan McCurry from 19 at the TPC Sawgrass, of course, you from Mezza Restaurant and Bar, Chef Omar Colazzo from Juliet's Bistro, which is at the Omni, Wesley Noguera from Chloe's Kitchen, and Tony Charbonnet, which is just, you know, one of our favorites, Publix Aprons Cooking School and Event Planning. So what actually happens here when a guest comes to the competition? What are you preparing? What's your secret entry this year?
Well, this year I'm going to do a lobster gumbo.
Describe it.
I'm going to actually put some... I'm going to use my fresh okra. Hopefully, my farm still has the fresh okra. So I'm going to be putting some of that in there. I'm going to be doing it a little bit different. I'm going to put it over some cheese grits.
Do you remember who won last year?
That was me.
You won. You were the winner. What was your dish last year?
I did lamb meatballs last year.
Oh, congratulations, from lamb to lobster.
Yep.
Well, it's going to be a great event. I heard that tickets are almost sold out, but people can still make donations to the March of Dimes by going to signaturechefs.org/Jacksonville. Thank you, Chef Eric Espinosa from Mezza. I think I'm going to come in and find what you're preparing tonight, and bring my hubby for a delicious seafood treat. Thanks. Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you very much
Good
for having me.
Event.
When
Thank
they
you.
Come to mind.
Again, that's Signature Chefs this Thursday, the 15th at the Downtown Omni. And we'll be right back.
WJCT is seeking creative, innovative sessions for our Teach Conference on Saturday, March 2nd. Presenters have the opportunity to connect with educators from across the First Coast. Proposals accepted until January 4th. Go to wjct.org/teach.
Happy 30th birthday, SSRIs. We've had 30 years of Prozac, but why are we still depressed?
Now in the United States, most people that are depressed get an antidepressant agent. You know, I'm a psychopharmacologist, and yet I increasingly want to help people get to where they don't have to take that medicine for the rest of their life to feel okay.
Rethinking Depression, next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRX.
Sunday at 3 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT and Vistar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with the 16th annual Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped off at WJCT and all Vistar Credit Union branches, Two Men in a Truck, and the Tom Bush family of dealerships. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Welcome back. Well, you may have heard something about a little recount going on here in Florida right now. You know that recount thing? It has our book club leader, Stacey Goldring, feeling patriotic both about our electoral process and the upcoming and very American holiday of Thanksgiving. With those traditions in mind, she is here, books in hand, recommending titles that we as Americans can all enjoy and come together around, which is a good thing and a desired thing. Stacey Goldring, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. How about you?
I'm like you. I'm hanging in there, and I'm always trying to see the bright side. Okay, so that's really a lie. great way to start the day. No, it's not that. It's I really love our country. I really do.
Yes.
And I'm doing my best to see where that Venn diagram, that commonality is, because that's so incredibly important right now.
Yes, how things that all Americans can rally together around.
Right.
We need that.
Yeah, yeah. So over a year ago, I started working with Cindy Edelman, and we put together a program called Literature, specifically designed to see what Americans, what we all have in common and what we can all be proud of as a group in totality. And we have so, America has so much, we have wonderful art, we have the arts, the written word, everything. So we've put together a series of programs, and I just want to talk about books because that's my gig. So a few books that I believe that we can all feel proud of, we can all put in everyone else's Christmas stocking, underneath the tree, near the menorah, whatever you want to call it. Here are things that we, as the U.S., as us, we can all be proud of. So this is my list. This is what I recommend. Get your Ticonderoga number 2 pencils ready, because here we go. First of all, let's start with, oh, I brought props so everyone can see. No, not really. But anywho.
It's anyhow. Theater of the mind.
Yeah, theater of the mind. Yes. Be creative. Huck Finn. By Twain.
You brought that. You're holding it in your hand.
Yes,
this the Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
You can see this is like from high school, whatever. So this is what I have to say about that. I'm totally going to quote here. All modern American literature comes from one book by Mark Twain called Huckleberry Finn. All American writing comes from that. There was nothing before. There's been nothing good since. And that's Ernest Hemingway. So if you have not yet read Finn, or if you a little bit forget, I suggest turning off all news except WJCT and going to the library or to the bookstore and getting a copy of this book and just sitting down and diving into what makes America fabulous.
It is the ultimate American novel.
It's so wonderful. And what one of the many things I have about, you know, a mile of notes sitting right here, I wish you could see just what I brought. I can't even tell you what I left in the car.
I believe it.
Okay.
But you know what? We're going to take a break and then hear what's in Stacey's notebook.
Great.
All
I'm
American
out to the
books
car.
And Thanksgiving books right after this. What do you know? Get up on again. What do you know?
On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to an interview with Stan Lee, who has died at the age of 95. He was Marvel Comics' chief editor and co-created Spider-Man, Black Panther, and The Incredible Hulk. And Katrina Longworth talks about her new book, Seduction, Sex, Lies, and Stardom in Howard Hughes' Hollywood. She hosts the podcast, You Must Remember This. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
In Northern California, a catastrophic fire continues to burn, and Southern California has its own deadly fires.
We found out from a few people that didn't evacuate that our house had burned completely to the ground. And so here we are, just trying to figure out where we can end up.
The latest on the fires and the people affected by them this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
I'm Marco Werman. On the world, we get an outside perspective.
I was born in Yemen.
So many people in Sweden.
Most people in South Africa.
Because getting outside yourself can be a good thing.
Once you move to a different country, you zoom out and you're able to see where is the other person coming from.
It is the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
A lot of comedians have gone after the current president. Hasan Minhaj isn't happy with our 42nd.
If you're a Muslim and you love America and freedom and you hate terror, stay here and help us win and make the future together.
That moment from the 2016 Democratic Convention that both rattled Minhaj and inspired his new talk show, Patriot Act. Hasan Minhaj, that's next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's a still life watercolor of a now late afternoon.
Welcome back. We're continuing our book club now with our book club leader, Stacey Goldring, because she brought a stack of all-American books into Studio 5 this morning. Books all Americans can agree on that are truly great and patriotic, too. So we just talked about Huckleberry Finn. What else is in that stack over there?
Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about the best book you've never heard of in your whole entire life. And that is called The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Gillam Perkins. Have you ever heard of this book? Okay. Well, you can go to archive.org, which is this completely free website, and download. Remember Suspense, the radio thriller that used to be, you know, have scary stories? Agnes Moorehead from Bewitched, remember? Mm-hmm. She does a great interpretation of this very small book, and it's on archive.org for free, or you can go, of course, and buy the book. This is a book that is, look how skinny it is. I brought both, I know everyone listening can't look, but you can, Melissa. So this is The Yellow Wallpaper.
This you can read in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, and here's the collection, if you want a collection of Charlotte Perkins Gilman's work. But anyway, moving forward. So what is this book about? This is... The plot is we're dealing with a woman who is postpartum. She's living in Victorian times, so you would never say that. Basically, she's losing her mind. And so what do you do when you're losing your mind and you're postpartum in Victorian times? Well, you go see their version of Dr. Oz. And his name was Dr. Mitchell. And what did he prescribe when a woman had melancholia? Well, you were to rest. You weren't to read. You weren't to do art. You weren't to speak. You weren't to do anything. You were supposed to eat like a milk-rich diet and just veg.
So lying there, she became obsessed by the yellow wallpaper.
Right.
Okay.
So our character starts to see this amazing yellow wallpaper in the walls. And then, so it's a very Victorian yellow wallpaper. And she starts to see with all the designs that the designs turn into bars like a prison.
So it's feminist literature.
It was before that was a word.
Before feminism was a thing. Sure.
Right. And she tries to break out.
So yellow wallpaper. Amazing, and then also amazing. In the stack, you have Catch 22.
Before we get to that, let's get to Catcher in the Rye.
Oh, of course.
Which is such a classic because it speaks for a generation who did not have those words to speak. So Holden Caulfield is the voice of what everyone was thinking, but it wasn't ever said before Salinger came around and put it into words. So these books all have kind of a rebel feel, which is very American, and that's why I like that.
We've got Huck Finn, Catcher in the Rye.
Right.
The yellow wallpaper.
Right.
And last but not least.
Oh, gosh, I have to pick this. I have such a stack. Okay, fine. I'll go local. James Weldon Johnson's Autobiography of an Ex-Colored Man. So this book is called An Autobiography of an African-American Man Who Contemplates and Records His Thoughts and Actions Regarding Passing as White. It was called an autobiography, but it wasn't. It was a novel.
Mm-hmm.
So people are reading this thinking that James Weldon Johnson really felt this way, but he's just an amazing writer.
He was an amazing man in general.
He was one of those polymaths.
Yeah, everyone in Jacksonville should read what he's written because he is Jacksonville's own. Okay, so some amazing suggestions by Stacy. And these books come from the Litter Archer program she created called Rebels, Outlaws, and Troublemakers.
That's right.
Now, you are having a discussion, a brown bag book discussion, coming up at the Jacksonville Community Alliance. This is coming up when and what's going to be on the agenda?
Well, as I'm to understand, they have had this amazing Discover Culture series that's been going on most of the month, and they're wrapping up. So today you can bring a brown bag lunch and go hear the author Chloe Benjamin talk via Skype about a really hot title called The Immortalists. So you just bring your lunch, show up at the JCA, you'll get to see and speak with the author, and what a lovely way to spend an afternoon.
Yes, go over there today. And the JCA, by the way, I can't say enough good things about everything they do. Amazing
just
program.
Just wonderful, absolutely.
But that's today, and let's also celebrate the 6th anniversary this month of Stacy leading book club discussions on this program, and by extension, all throughout the community. You can catch her pretty much every month at our sponsor, San Marco Books and More.
That's
leading
right.
A live physical book
right,
club.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it's
so,
6 years. Fabulous, fabulous. I look forward to 60 more with you.
That's right, me too. And thank you for coming every month and helping us all become better readers.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Stacy. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. The show director is Michelle Corum. Our theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. If you missed anything, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. And 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with 89.9 this morning. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.